Welcome to Music from the Tower, highlighting the beauty of sacred and classical music. We come to you from the Tower of Hope on the magnificent campus of Christ Cathedral in Garden Grove, California. Now, here's your host, John Romeri.
And this is Music from the Tower. This is John Romeri, and I have a very special friend here today, Matthew Gray. Welcome, Matt.
Thank you, John. Good to see you again.
You are not a stranger to Music from the Tower. You've been on before. We did your whole life history.
Indeed.
And we talked about all the great things. Let's review a little for our listeners. You were at the, when I first met you, you were the music director at the Holy Family Cathedral in Orange.
Yes. Holy Family was there for 16 years.
Wow. And before that, you had had other parishes, and we talked about your college. And,
right.
But then from there, you went on uptown to the Basilica, Mission Basilica.
I've been there 13 years now.
So. Wow. You must be old, Matthew.
I'm very old, but aging well.
I'm 170, but it's still going strong here. Well, today we're going to talk about Sacre France.
Yes.
And so tell us, what on earth is going on with Sacre France?
It's a chance to look at some of the 20th century composers that wrote sacred music for that period. There's not really, I wouldn't say, a lot that highlights the French music that is sacred. I mean, we have the great organ music and we have the great romantic period, and then it kind of tapers off in the 20th century. So I thought it'd be nice to take a look at some of the masterworks from the 20th
century.
There
is some fabulous French music, but often it's either in French.
Yes.
But there's so much that is in Latin, which is great. You know,
90%.
Some of the 20th century German music or Italian music is just in German and Italian.
Right.
And it's hard to jam it into a choir that perhaps only sings in English and Latin.
Right.
But in France, it's different because they still used a lot of Latin in the early part of the century. And so tell us where this program is happening.
It's going to be at Christ Cathedral.
I know that place. It's a fabulous place.
It's going to be at the Arboretum. It's going to be a new venue for us there. It's at 7:30 p.m. on April 20th.
Right. And there are, of course, still tickets available.
Yes.
But it's the closing concert of this year's season. And it's a very important one for us because we featured some wonderful groups this year. But it is always such a treat to have your group, the D'Angelis Vocal Ensemble. So let's do a little promo. We've already talked about them on the previous show, but this is an anniversary year for you, a lucky 13. Right?
Yes, 13 years. And this year we're highlighting kind of, I guess you could say, kind of the European masters. We did a program of Herbert Howells in October, Benjamin Britten in the December, Handel in February, and we're ending with France.
So you're jumping
April.
The pond now.
We are.
And coming over to the good side.
Yes.
Well, the other programs were absolutely spectacular, and we are going to share a little piece of that just in a minute. It was a big Howells anniversary, the 125th anniversary of Herbert Howells, and you did the whole Requiem, which was just amazing.
Beautiful. And stunning.
But you're going to share another piece for us. Tell us about that one.
It's the Scribe. And I think at the last radio show, I gave you a little tidbit of it. It was written by Herbert Howells to celebrate the 80th birthday of Ray Vaughan Williams. And so he wrote it specifically for Vaughan Williams. Howells used one of his favorite poets, which was Walter de la Mare. De Mare composed the text. Howells wrote the music as a tribute to his friend and colleague and mentor, Ray Vaughan Williams. And it is absolutely stunning music.
Well, and this is actually D'Angelis singing, right?
Yes, this is a live recording of us at the Basilica for our program in October as part of that celebration for Herbert Howells' 125th birthday.
Now, tell us how many singers are in D'Angelis. How many singers are we listening to in this recording?
This recording, we have 22. The singers are determined by the repertoire. So if we're doing fairly straightforward four-part music from the Renaissance, we can use 16. Even sometimes a fewer. If we progress farther into music history and it requires more Debussy, more soprano parts, alto parts, tenor parts, bass parts, we add more bodies, but we typically don't go over 24.
That's and been how many our will be singing in Sacre France?
There will be 22.
Okay.
I know.
Is that the magic number usually? Yeah.
Well, I know the Arboretum favors the upper frequencies rather than the lower frequencies.
So beefing up the men?
Exactly. I've tucked a few men into the lower section to help balance that out. So
that's
it's
right.
Good
your
to know
past
your room.
Performances here at the campus have been in the cultural center,
yes,
right?
Which
is a very live space.
Very live
space. But we need more seats, Matthew. Every time you come, you draw a big crowd. And we need more seats, so we're putting you in the Arboretum. And you better get a really big crowd, because pretty soon you're moving to the big house.
Yes, indeed.
And,
that'd be great.
You got to come up with 2,400 people to fill that cathedral. But in the Arboretum, we have plenty of seats, and we do hope folks will come out. Let's hear a little bit of Howl, shall we?
Yes. And
let's tantalize them with how fabulous this group is. This is The Scribe by Herbert Howells, sung by D'Angelis. This is a live recording, right?
Yes.
And guess who's conducting? Matthew Gray.
That's me.
All right. All right. We will be right back. This is Music from the Tower with a very special French edition today, speaking with Matthew Gray, The Scribe by Herbert Howells. We'll be right back. Back. Music from the Tower. Wasn't that a beautiful piece? A live performance. That is so thrilling. And you know I promote live performance all the time from this show. There is nothing. You can listen to all these recordings all day long, but there is nothing like being in the Arboretum and being surrounded by the sounds of these glorious groups, whether it's Talis Scholars or Libera or whoever it is, or even our own choirs. But in this coming April 20th, right here in the Arboretum, you will hear the D'Angelis Vocal Ensemble with Matthew Gray conducting.
Yes.
So, Matt, that was beautiful. Tell us more about what's coming in Sacre France.
Well, we're highlighting basically three French composers. We've got Francis Poulenc, who is the headliner for the program.
Yes, he's
probably
the wig.
Yeah, most popular, most well-known of the French 20th century composers. And then probably less known is Pierre Villette, a composition teacher, beloved by his students, and wrote a number of really beautiful works for chorus. And then the sleeper, and probably the one of the best and the one that I love the most, is Alfred Desenclos.
You just like saying that, don't you?
I do. Alfred Desenclos. <No. laughs> I practiced.
Did you practice up on that? I'm not
I
even going to say it.
And what's so fun about Desenclos is that if you're an instrumentalist, you know Desenclos, because he wrote most compositions for the saxophone quartets, and
wow,
lots of beautiful saxophone music, but also has some stunningly beautiful music for chorus.
Oh, that's great. Oh, I can't wait. Well, it's going to be an amazing concert, and it's the final one of our season. The Poulenc are especially my favorite. Of course, I love the great Big Gloria, that big major work.
Orchestral work, something for the opening of the cathedral,
could be,
with the Pacific Symphony. That would be stupendous.
Wouldn't that be fun? And then do the Poulenc organ concerto at the same time.
With
Matthew conducting, that's right.
I love that piece. And the harpsichord piece, too.
I do, too. He's a great composer, and everybody talks about Poulenc in terms of little snippets. It's always like two or four measures, and every little phrase is a miniature, and they're all hooked together.
I have the same experience with him. It's all little. It seems like they're little two-measure phrases, and then those two-measure phrases repeat, and then it's an introduction of another two phrases. It's very, I guess, germ-like, call it.
It's a very funny way of composing, but yet it works.
Oh, it's just
amazing.
You know,
no matter what piece you do of his, it's always beautiful.
Yes. I was sharing with the singers last night, because we had another rehearsal. I said, it's the type of music that you have to really commit to in regards to learning. But after you have learned it, you will never, ever forget it in your lifetime.
There are phrases, little earworms of the Gloria that are always in your head, you know. And all of a sudden you realize you're thinking, La Dame Uste, there's these little bits, but they're always...
Benedicibus Uste.
But they're all short, just like that, you know. Yep. And he can write a whole piece on La Dame Uste, it's great.
Yeah.
It's fresh and interesting writing, isn't it?
Yeah.
And fun to conduct. I love conducting. It's a conductor's nightmare in the sense of multiple rhythms.
Rhythms, yeah.
You know, because all these measures are not the same beat pattern.
I have every measure in my massive G score marked, because almost every measure in the entire work is a different meter.
If you look at any of my Poulenc scores, these giant red marks all the way through of the meter changes, which just means you're conducting a different pattern as a conductor. You can't just do it in four and think, oh, now I'm just kind of into this piece. No, you got to be on your A game the whole way.
And that's just the beginning. That's the backbone. Now, how do you take those multiple meters and actually make it into something that's musical?
Yes.
Is a real challenge. The musician sees, okay, 5/4, 3/4, 2/4, 6/4, 8/4. Okay, what does that mean? How does that affect the phrase and the greater architecture of the piece? So that's where the conductor comes in. And okay, this is how this is supposed to to work and the phrasing. It's amazing with Poulenc. I really enjoy that.
To take those snippets and make them musical is always a challenge.
Yeah.
Well, if any conductor can do it, Mr. Gray,
well, thank you
very much. Can do it.
And I know the voice, and I know the chorus, and I feel really blessed about that.
Well, yes, these are basically your singers. Now, are they always the same musicians, or does it change a little bit
about
sometime?
80% of the singers are singers that I've worked with now for a number of years.
And have some been in all 13 years?
Yes, there's about half a dozen that have.
Oh, isn't that great?
Liz Lazadinsky, Robert DiCarlo, Lauren McCall, and a couple others that have been.
Those are certainly names we all know, those of us who do music in Southern California.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah, that's for sure.
They've been there since the beginning, almost 14 years ago. So
it is amazing to go to all the big places here, whether it's Christ Cathedral or St. James in the City, or now St. John's Episcopal Cathedral,
or All Saints
Beverly Hills.
Right.
We're going there tonight to hear Canterbury. And, you know, there's just always the singers are the same wherever you go.
Yeah.
The best singers are the best singers, and that's all there is to
it. And they enjoy the small ensemble and the really kind of challenging choral work.
Yes, of just being a few on a part, or sometimes even one on a part.
Right. That's why they do it.
Well, you can. Yes, it's a big commitment. It's a big drive, I'm sure, for them to come down to Orange County and all that. But it's so worth it to be in an ensemble like that. It really keeps your chops up
as a
singer. You know?
I'm smiling in the studio now because, again, we had our rehearsal last night. And even after the third rehearsal, some of the music is kicking their tails. They're just scratching their heads and thinking, you know, how come I can't get that, or why is that not working? And we were talking last night. It's a lot of the music of Poulenc is instrumentally based. He treats the voice like an instrument, and so instead of the facility of pressing down a key or fingering a bridge, your voice has to be able to make those switches.
Right. And not scoop from one note to the
exactly.
other. It's very much like Bach in a way, don't you
think?
Yeah,
oh yeah.
I think, you know, when I look at the lines of the music of Bach, it's very instrumental.
Yes.
Bach was a violinist, and, you know, he thinks in terms of being able to jump all over the place.
Yes.
But in a vocal way, especially when you have amateur choruses or semi-pro choruses, that's a difficult thing.
It's virtually impossible. I mean,
yeah.
because if you think of music and you think of diatonic music and you think, okay, I can do this. I know
it's
where
I'm going
to go.
Stepwise.
Ray,
yeah.
B is.
Mozart, but, Haydn.
Oh,
yeah.
Gosh, you have to, it goes way beyond that with the music of Poulenc. It's just, when you hear it, you'll hear echoes of Stravinsky and a lot of his music. And Stravinsky's another one that's very visceral, very rhythmically based. And you have to know how to sing in an instrumental fashion and just be able to sing these octaves and thirds and then tritones and then diminished fifths and all these other really, really awkward bits.
Well, I'm sure the singers are experiencing what I experience as I sit down and prepare a piece. I'm playing through the part, and I think, well, I've got that.
Right.
You know, now I sort of have to get that while everybody else is doing their shtick around me.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, I can't do it anymore.
No.
You know?
And this type of music, it pays to actually go and do your due diligence on your individual parts. But in this type of music, when you put it together with the ensemble, there's probably something that's dissonant against you. And so it totally throws
right.
you off. I mean, really like half-step dissonances, which are really kind of, they're exciting, but they're also just such a challenge to be able to do vocally. Because a half-step's really kind of close in the human voice,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes, it is. It, yes.
it is.
Scary close.
It is scary
and
close.
And to stay in tune.
Exactly.
Let's listen to some more music. This is not your choir. This is...
No. Harry Christopher's.
Yes. So fabulous.
And the 16.
We must bring them along someday
yes,
here to Christ
please,
Cathedral.
Please.
Wouldn't that be fun?
Yes.
But this is the Salve Regina of
yes.
Poulenc. And how different is that? Is it based on the chant in any way?
It's not based on the chant. In fact, I don't think there's really any music that I know of Poulenc that's actually based on the chant.
No, not like Durafley or some of the others that
and
have
we can
done
probably
that
talk
in the
about
French style.
Some more things about that after the break. But this one's kind of the primer for Poulenc in regards to compositional technique.
Was it an early piece?
Early piece, right on the same time as the Mass in G was written, 1936. But it's still kind of very tame and very reserved. So Mass in G, you're not going to hear at a Sunday Mass. It's not going to happen. But if you wanted to hear maybe a Salve Regina at an evening prayer or maybe during a Marian feast, it would actually make the transition into sacred music in a church really quite well, because it's not too out of the box in regards to dissonance and overly rhythmic. It's quite sensuous, actually.
Yes, I told you during the break that I had a bride come and ask me for this piece. And I thought, oh, sure, I'm thinking the chant the whole time. And she comes and brings me 16 copies of the Poulenc Salve Regina.
Which is not enough copies, because you need more bodies to sing
know,
that.
It was great. Well, here we are. Here is Harry Christopher 16 and the Poulenc Salve Regina. And we will be back with a lot more from Matthew Gray. This is Music from the Tower. And very French today, and this is Relevant Radio. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Music from the Tower. That was Salve Regina by the composer Francis Poulenc. We are talking about all things French.
Yes.
And we're preparing ourselves and preparing all of Southern California for this great concert, Sacre France, at the Arboretum here at Christ Cathedral on April 20th. Tickets are still available. And, of course, as always, you can find all the music we play today on our website, ChristCathedralMusic.org. And you can also find where to get tickets for this great concert with the DeAngelis Vocal Ensemble. So thank you, Matt, for being here to give us this great preview. We've been talking about Poulenc, but let's talk a little bit more about Poulenc. The one thing about Francis Poulenc, unlike César Franck or Jean Langlais or Louis Vierne or all these Saint-Saëns, all these other people were church musicians,
yes,
primarily.
Yes.
You know, they all taught at the conservatory. They all wrote lots of compositions, but they all had some foot in the door of the church.
Yes.
And that was not true of Poulenc. Tell us about Poulenc's life.
By the time he was a young man, he was pretty much an atheist. Didn't believe in the church and didn't participate in the Catholic Church. He came from a Catholic family. His parents raised him Catholic and just was something that was not to his liking. And then in 1936, a very good friend of his, Pierre Octave Ferraud, got into an automobile accident and he was killed. And Poulenc has this big crisis of faith in 1936. And so what he does is he takes and completes a retreat. He goes to the shrine at Roc Amador and he discovers the prayers for the Litany à la Vierge Noire. And that starts this whole conversion of faith again in him. And from 1936 on, he returns to his faith.
And yes, it's in 36 that all these pieces start to appear.
Exactly.
The Salve Regina, the Mass.
The Mass, indeed. And then that's where all of that Catholic and the sacred texts start coming from Poulenc. And so he had just finished his studies with Nadia Boulanger, and I think he was actually quite set to do this. So Mass in G, Salve Regina, the Litanies à la Vierge Noire were all
probably the four little pieces on to St. Francis, the words of St. Francis.
Yes.
And, of course, then there are little sets, the four
motets.
Christmas motets, the four Lenten motets.
Yes.
Are there four Easter motets? I don't think so.
I don't think there
Just those two seasons. But such great music. So if you don't know the music of Francis Poulenc out there, do a little investigation, a little Spotify, or a little Apple Music, and certainly you can hear these pieces over and over and over on our website as well.
Yes.
But all the better to come hear them live
at
the Arboretum with the DeAngelis Vocal Ensemble.
Yes.
I cannot wait. So Poulenc studied with Boulanger, but still was not an organist, did not play in a parish church, did not have that kind of tie to the church, but yet wrote this sacred music.
Yes, I think this really, this whole passing away of his friend really just kind of shocked him and kind of just catapulted him into this idea of taking and writing sacred music. And so everything from 1936 is almost all chorally based.
Because he wrote a lot of instrumental music,
too. Yeah, beautiful
instrumental music. I mean, wonderful concerto for organ and orchestra.
A harpsichord concerto, a suite called Les Biches, which is just stunningly beautiful work of music.
Was he a member of Les Six? Was he a member of the Big Six, those six composers?
Yes.
And they were not sacred in any way.
No. But just all the remaining portions of his life, we get to the great Mass, the Gloria,
Too bad there wasn't
sitting.
A rest of a Mass that went with that.
I know, it would be beautiful. Yeah. The Stabat Mater is another one that came out of that, which is another huge orchestral work by him with chorus and soloist. It's absolutely beautiful.
But no matter how big his works get, they're all still these little two-measure, little call-and-response little phrases.
Anacine consonant type things.
Yes, maybe it has to do with what's going on in the painting world with, pointillism and I don't know.
You know, what would be fun is you sang a little phrase for me before from the Gloria, and I answered back with the answer.
Yes, we all know the answer.
And if I were to sing Sanctus, your answer would be
Sanctus.
Everything has that wonderful
question
and answer, which is just brilliant. And then he takes and starts developing that and just developing and developing and developing it. And it's just, it's kind of fun. I like it.
Well, we're going to hear the whole Mass in G at the concert.
Yes, we are.
But today, we're going to just feature the Sanctus.
Yes.
So this is really the liturgical text.
Yes.
The Kyrie, is
Kyrie,
there a
Gloria? Gloria, no Credo.
No Credo.
Sanctus with a nice ethereal Benedictus, and which comes back to that beginning Sanctus theme. And then another kind of very... The sound of the Kyrie and the sound of the Agnus Dei are kind of almost medieval, kind of have that Faubourdon type sound where you have that sustained note against moving notes here. But I think the highlight of the form is the Sanctus.
Sanctus. Would this be have really, been meant to be sung at the liturgy?
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
I think you're,
yeah.
I'll share a story with you. I actually did this work about 10 years ago. And we did it at the Basilica.
With the Angelus.
With the Angelus. And then we got asked to do it at a lovely little church in Manhattan Beach. And it probably seated about 100 people.
Oh, wow.
And we sang the Kyrie. And after the Kyrie movement was done, the first five rows of the audience stood up and moved to the back of the church. Because it was that intense of music when they heard it. So I don't think liturgically it would work too well.
So it was never meant for the liturgy.
No. I think it was more kind of a cathartic piece for him, trying to deal with the grief of that loss of a friend.
But yet chose a liturgical text.
Yes, and almost everything following. There's only a few choral pieces that are secular-based. We have the Sept Chansons, which we've done too, which are beautiful works that are kind of Renaissance and medieval in their... settings, kind of emulating French chanson.
Well, my guess is over your 13 years, you are such a creative programmer. You know, I mean, we've had this Howells birthday party, you know, where we, and everything was tied to everything. You know, like the piece we heard was actually a birthday gift to Vaughan Williams.
Right.
You know, all these great connections, and your concerts are always like that.
They're
fascinating just in the study of how each piece somehow relates to the other.
Right.
And we're going to get into two other composers, which probably our audience does not know very much about, and certainly this old boy doesn't either.
No.
And you're going to tell us all about it, Matthew.
I will.
But in the meantime, let's hear a little more music. Let's hear the Poulenc. This is the Sanctus from the Mass in G. And who's performing this?
This is the combination of the Winchester Cathedral Choir and King's Cathedral Choir from London.
The two choirs together.
Yes. Not the King's from
Cambridge.
No, but King's College in London.
Wow. Okay. So, didn't know there was such a thing.
Yes.
Very cool.
Nice recording.
Is this recorded at Winchester, do you know?
I'm not sure.
Anyway, it'll be great. And here is the Poulenc Mass, the Sanctus Movement. You get the whole thing at the Concert Sacre France coming right up. This is Music from the Tower, and you're listening to Relevant Radio.
Oh,
we are back with Matthew Gray. Matt, thank you so much for being with us today. This is the program Sacre France.
Yes.
And we are talking about French composers like out the wazoo here.
Yes.
All about Poulenc for the last segments. But now we're going to move on to a couple composers that perhaps our audience doesn't know much about. Tell us about the first one.
First one is Alfred Dessenclaude.
Oh, you just wanted to say that again. And I gave you such a good lead in, too.
Thank you very much. I'll say it again.
Say it again. Who
Alfred
is it?
Alfred Dessenclaude.
And what about Dessenclaude?
Well, Dessenclaude, obviously French composer, 20th century. He was a teacher, quite a good composition teacher. He won the Prix de Rome, 1942,
wow,
which is
a
pretty prestigious award. And I think he was probably the one that was probably the most influenced by Gregorian chant. When you hear his music, it is not based on Gregorian chant, but it is very chant-like.
Huh?
Yes. So much different compositional style than Francis Poulenc. A little bit more modal, a little bit more austere, a little more reserved. Kind of like a 20th century Frenchman interprets Renaissance motet. That type of style, if you could imagine that.
Now, was he a church musician?
Not a church musician. No.
Just a composer.
No, composer, teacher, spent most of his time doing instrumental work. He would write for the saxophone, and any of you that are jazz musicians know of Dessenclaude and his saxophone quartets.
Wow.
Quite famous. So I guess he could be kind of considered a crossover artist. The instrumentalists would know him, especially the wind players, choral folks.
Is there a great deal of choral music or just a few pieces?
No, there's probably maybe less than a dozen choral works.
Wow.
There's a quite lovely requiem of his.
A full Latin requiem?
Full Latin requiem. And then a few motets, and that's it. And the rest of his output is instrumental works.
And are the motets in a chant style?
They're all in a chant style. We're doing Nos Autem Gloriae. And then we're doing the Salve Regina on the program, too. And they're both they're just kind of a modal base because the chant style being modal, not a lot of divisi, but really, really fine choral writing. Quite
lovely. Well, the Nos Autem, of course, is the introit for Holy Thursday.
Yes.
A beautiful, beautiful piece. Now we glory in the cross of Christ.
Right.
You know, ties into that, necessary sin of Adam.
Right.
You know, without the cross, we have no resurrection.
Right.
Holy Thursday kicks off with that great text. We've been singing the Inario, but we might have to look at the...
It would be a great piece for the Dawson Choir. It'd be a great piece for the Cathedral Choir. They would just eat it up. It's
You'll
quite
have
beautiful.
To share that with me.
And
not
too hard, but still quite satisfying music. Quite beautiful.
I can't wait. I'll do some exploring. Yeah. But you're performing the Salve Regina on. So what a nice contrast to the Poulenc Salve Regina.
We're actually doing both.
Yeah.
Doing the Nos Autem Gloriae and the Salve Regina.
Oh, you are? Great. I'll hear it soon. I better get my tickets.
Yes. Get your tickets. Yeah. I thought it'd be nice to have, you know, you talked earlier about how I like to program and like to.
You are the master.
So, okay, let's do the setting of the Poulenc Salve Regina and then see what happens when another French composer, same period, same era as Poulenc, takes and writes the same text. And they are polar opposites.
Night and day, huh?
Yeah, night and day. Both still quite beautiful, but totally different treatments of the text.
Okay, so I didn't know you were doing the Nos Autem.
Yes.
You know, we have not been tantalizing our our audience with the full thrust of how the program goes, nor have we been putting it on our website. We just have the few composers.
Yes.
It's probably soon we should be divulging the entire program so people can really get their taste buds going.
Yes. And when I did the program before, I didn't do the Mass in G straight through either because it's an earful. You will be shocked by what you hear. So I'm kind of doing the Mass, even though it wasn't meant to be a liturgical Mass, I'm actually doing it liturgically. So we'll start with a motet, then we'll have a movement of the Kyrie, and then go to perhaps another motet, a movement of the Gloria.
Okay.
Sanctus Benedictus, another motet. So it kind of breaks up.
So are you mixing up the composers then?
We are mixing them up.
So okay.
We're going to start the program.
What a fascinating program.
Yeah.
You're the master at this.
I like it. It's good. I always try to think of programming in regards to what I would like to hear in the audience. Because just like you go to a lot of programs and a lot of concerts where you're actually not conducting, but you're actually just listening.
Yes, and I love going to concerts. Live performance, that's right. My watchword here.
And I get distracted if the programming's not what I think the programming should be. And so, and I guess
well,
it's
I must
a
say,
call.
I won't name any names, but there are times when you think, how much longer can this go on? Or when programs are just interminably long,
right.
And not necessarily interesting. We talked a little bit a few months ago with Carl St. Clair, who is another master of programming, and how he did that whole program, that whole evening, on Anton Bruckner.
Right.
And we had the chant as we walked in, and, you know, there were visuals, there were slides, and then he came out and talked about it and got us so prepped and so psyched, and then we heard the work, you
right.
know. I mean, there's a certain mastery of programming, and other people learn a pile of pieces and just put them in.
Right. But, you know, this, I like this, I like this, I like this.
Let's I love these
on
pieces.
The
Let's put them
right.
in a program.
Yeah,
I'm guilty as charged.
That's work. You know, and you talked about Carl. I mean, think about it, how we learn now. We're not just oral learners or visual learners. We have to have all of those at the same time now.
Right. Screen. We have the screen going.
And listening and text and smartphones and all the accoutrement that we have to.
So will you have slides accompanying this
No,
music?
I would love to have slides. But you know that when I do the programs, they're kind of didactic. So I like to talk to the audience to kind of give them an idea of what to listen for.
Well, I think people love that. I do. I think people love to have something to listen for.
Right.
You know, as an audience member, that does keep me, my mind from wandering away.
Right.
You know, that it keeps me a little bit focused. And, wow, I can't wait to hear that third entrance of this or
right.
whatever the conductor sort of gives us. And I think that, too, is part of the job of a conductor.
Yes.
I got that just this past Holy Week. This man who came up and his very first words to me were, I don't know a thing about music, but watching you bring in the sections around the different choirs and your hand would go that direction and then somebody would start singing a little melody and then your hand went to the other section and they had it. And he goes, it was just fascinating to me.
Well, that just validates.
And you want to say, well, that's what music does.
Right.
You know, that's how it works. But having the conductor almost be the tour guide, even
right.
as the conductor,
and he
is pretty cool.
Mention anything about the oral component of what you were doing. He was actually talking about visual.
He was locked into my visuals
right.
and how it coordinated into the oral experience he was having.
Right.
You know, it wasn't just, well, there's this piece going on, isn't that nice?
Right.
But somehow, as a conductor, I was bringing him to those pieces.
Yeah.
Let's go back to your saxophone guy.
Yes, and, Alfred Desenclo.
I cannot wait to hear the music of this man. And we're going to hear some right now. Let's hear the Salve Regina, again by that Impostor King's College Choir.
Yes, of London.
Of London. This is Martin Neary conducting,
yes,
right?
Exactly.
Not Stephen Clearberry.
No.
But we're going to hear a little bit of Desenclo, huh?
Yes.
And how many pieces are we going to hear actually on the program?
We'll have two. We'll have the Salve Regina
and the
Nos Autem.
Oh, wonderful. Oh, wonderful. Well, all right. This is Music from the Tower. We are having the best time with Matthew Gray, enjoying a little preview of this glorious program that's coming up. And this is the Salve Regina by Desenclo, King's College Choir of London. This is Music from the Tower. We shall return.
Thank you.
Well, welcome back. This is our final segment of Music from the Tower today, and we are doing all things French in a program entitled Sacre France, preparing for the program Sacre France, I should say, with the D'Angelis Vocal Ensemble and its conductor, Matthew Gray, who is right here in the studio with us, giving us this wonderful education on French music. Thank you, Matt, for being with us today.
Thank you, John.
It is so much fun to have you here on the campus. Matthew, we should say, besides being the director of music at the Mission Basilica, is also the assistant director of our diocesan choir here in Orange, and just conducted a whole bunch of pieces for us at the Chrism Mass. It was so beautiful. We had such a beautiful Mass with our choir.
It was beautiful.
It's our third year of diocesan choir under my direction and yours together. And I think they're just doing great.
Yes.
We are on our way getting ready for the dedication of the cathedral. This is, we're down to T minus 1 year, you know. It's a year from now. We will be just in our final rehearsals for the dedication in July. It's going to be great, great, great. We can't wait. And we'll be preparing some big choral work for our dedication of the organ, which will happen in the first year of 2020. Nonetheless, we have one more composer to introduce you to. Tell us about this one.
Pierre Villette. So another composer, another composition
French
teacher.
Yes, French, not a church musician.
Not a church musician, no.
Do you have something against organists, Matthew? What is going on here? There's César Franck.
Well, I don't play the organ.
There's Langlais. There's Marshall. Come on now.
You know, I love organ music. I would do a whole program if you are at the keyboard. We're going to do the Brahms Requiem.
Yes.
In the spring.
Exactly.
The organ version. So there you are.
It's going to be fun.
Yeah. So Pierre Villette, you know, I think he got his start when he...
Is he a contemporary Poulenc?
I would say contemporary Poulenc, yes. He got his start or became known to the world when one of his works was sung for the Christmas service for King's College Cambridge, the Lessons and Carols.
Wow.
And
okay.
It was the hymn A la Verge piece, which I think you know, the old...
I do.
Yeah. So gorgeous piece of music. I wasn't sure if it was actually one that they commissioned, because they usually highlight one
every
new
year,
work
they
every
have it,
year,
yes.
Or whether they just added that to the list of works that they do that
was
year.
Was it a commission piece?
Did I don't know. I don't think so. I'm still researching that. So
they just put out a whole album of more of their commissioned pieces.
Yes.
Stephen Cleobury is retiring this year, you know,
yes.
So it's his final season.
Yes. And so that work was featured on one of the Lessons and Carols. And I think that was in the 90s. I think that kind of catapulted his career, kind of brought him to the forefront. People were hearing these beautiful added note chords and luscious harmonies, and
French.
Just like,
also
oh my
French.
Goodness, yes. And it's just, I mean, all of these composers use that idiom of added note chords and kind of that sensuous French language that they have for composition. But that one is,
which
the
again
only...
is super easy on a piano or on an instrument, but as a vocalist to try to sustain that extra sixth or seventh,
added,
you know,
ninth
it sounds
chord,
very
13th
cool
chord, and so on. I think that kind of made him come into the forefront for choral scholars like ourselves that were thinking, who is this Pierre Villette guy?
Yeah.
And so on the program, you're going to hear his setting of the O Salutaris Ostia, Latin text, obviously,
Benediction
the hymn A la Verge, which is a hymn to the Virgin Mary. And then we have three motets by Pierre Villette.
And what are the motet texts?
We have O Quam Suavis Est, we have Panis Angelicus, and I can't remember what the third one is right now. But they are absolutely positively wonderful works, and they are so beautiful and so much in that French idiom that you're just, they're like little French cream puffs is what I like to think of, because they're not too dissonant. There's O Quam Suavis Est, there's Jesu Ducis Memoria, and then Panis Angelicus. Yeah.
Beautiful.
Just lovely.
You just did the Leo Nestor. Jesu Ducis.
Oh, yes.
It's so beautiful, based on chant. Now, are any of those based on chant?
They're not based on chant. All newly composed, and all would function very well in a liturgical situation. So if you think about the Poulenc, probably not. Maybe some of the motets, definitely, but not the Mass. Descinclos, Villette, all of them would fit very well into a liturgical situation. And quite beautiful. I mean, you're gonna love them.
I love them already. If your group is doing them, I love them.
Yeah.
We're talking about the D'Angelis Vocal Ensemble. We are talking about a concert called Sacre France, which will be right here on our campus April 20th at 7:30 in the evening. It is going to be a great night. We even have wine.
I was just going to say, did you tell them about the wine?
We have a wine, a little mini wine tasting afterwards and meet the artists. And it's all free. Ooh la la.
Yes.
It is going to be quite the night. So do not miss that concert. You can still get tickets at ChristCathedralMusic.org. You can also always go on and listen to all of our radio shows from Music from the Tower and all of the music that we play here on the show. It's always available at ChristCathedralMusic.org. So do stay tuned. As always, I encourage you to get out and hear some live performance. And if we didn't entice you from today's show, I don't know what will. There's so much great music out there. Be sure that you treat yourself to some music in live performance. Matthew, thank you so much for being with us.
You're welcome,
John. This is Music from the Tower, and we will be back with another great episode next week. But in the meantime, get out there and hear some great music, my friends. This is John Romero, your host, and thank you for being with us today. Thank you, Matthew, and we will see you at the concert.
Thanks.